Today, we will deal with the problem of the relation between state and church, and that is the biggest problem in the daily politics and in the daily life of the churches in the communist countries. I cannot say much about the other communist countries because I'm not that familiar with their situation, so I will focus it today on the situation in East Germany. And this situation is very special, as we learned the day before. But before I come to the special story of this problem in East Germany, I have to explain a bit about the historical background of this question in order to understand the problem. For you as Americans, the separation of church and state is maybe a matter of course. But it isn't a matter of course in the history of the church. The problem is a problem which arose since the time of Enlightenment. Before, there were some struggling between church and politics, as we had in Europe, especially between the emperors and the papacy, but we had not the real question of a separation between church and state, because the whole society was accepted as one society, and the problem was not to separate politics from the church, but how much the church participated in political power and how much the political power participated in church doctrine and in church politics. Since the Enlightenment, religion became a private matter, and that is a very new thing. Religious, to regard religion as something of your privacy, is something which comes from the idea of enlightenment that every single individual has the right to decide about his or her own life. That was not the case before the Enlightenment. Before the Enlightenment, there was only the society, and everybody had to contribute to the society. Maybe you are familiar with the work of one of the famous German writers of the Enlightenment, Gotthold Ephraim Lessing. And he wrote a very famous parable in his play, Nathan the Wise. And this is a ring parable. And I cannot tell the whole story, but the point is that a father has a ring, and he wants to give it to his sons. He has three sons. But because he realizes that there will be envy and struggle for the ring, he made copies of the ring. And when he died, nobody knew which one was the real ring. And Lessing meant by this rings the different religions. And the point of his story is that he says maybe the real ring is lost, and all religions, the Christian religion as well as the Islam or the Eastern religions, are just expression of the true ring, but they are not the true ring in itself. This idea, religion as a private matter, led in America, in the Constitution of the United States, to a separation between church and state. But that was not the case in Europe. In Europe, we had different models how the state dealt with the church. We had the model in Prussia, where the Prussian king tried to be the ruler, the political ruler of the Protestant church by the famous act of unifying the Reformed and the Lutheran church in the last century. And we have still, even in the United States, a following up from this unification, the United Church of Christ is the church which arose from the state unification of two different churches. In the Roman Catholic areas, like in Austria, we had the Josephinism, as it is called, after the Caesars there, after the kings there. And that was a different kind of ruling of the state over the church, and the church as a supportive institution of the state. And the same model with different, with a different variation in the area of the Orthodox Church, where there was a strong relationship between the patriarch and the Tsar. I mentioned that earlier when I spoke about the situation in Russia and the Soviet Union. So the idea of separation between state and church is in Europe a very new idea, which came into existence in Germany only after the First World War in the Weimar Republic. And that was one reason why the church strongly opposed the democracy in the Weimar Republic, because the church lost its privileges of the state. The idea of separation between church and state was the basis of the organization of the relation between religion and political power. And that was the basis, the basic conviction for organizing the relation between church and state after the Second World War in the communist or the so-called communist society in East Germany. From the very beginning on, there was a strong separation between church and state. And the whole problem of the life of the church in East Germany comes at least a bit from an interpretation of this separation. What does it mean that state and church are separated? In the United States, it didn't mean that members of the government couldn't be members of the church. Of course, they are still. There are even some Lutheran. It didn't mean that the government was against churches or against religion. It was only the conviction that religion has nothing to do with political power, and that political power should be separated from religious convictions. But basically, the whole society understood, and I think still understands itself, as a Christian society. That's the case in the United States and maybe in Canada. For the communist countries, the separation between church and state means something totally different. It means that religion should have nothing to do with political problems, and that religion and religious convictions are only private convictions which have nothing to do with your reality as a political citizen of a country. And of course, that leads to a very schizophrenic situation, because as a citizen of a country, you are politically, you act politically, whatever you do. And you cannot separate your own existence into a religious existence and into a political existence. That's impossible. And it is very sad and very interesting in a way, that sounds maybe not very good, but it is, to realize how that works in reality. It leads exactly to a schizophrenic existence, that people say publicly things which they are not say privately, and that they have private convictions which they do not make public. That is a very difficult situation for human beings, to live two lives in one body. But that is a situation which depends on this understanding of separation between state and church. Of course, there are other elements which are important for an interpretation of this reality of separation between state and church. And therefore, we have these differences in the different communist countries. One very important factor is the size of the church. In East Germany, for example, you had a very strong Protestant church. And that had a great impact on the understanding of the relation between church and state, because Protestant churches understand their existence much more politically than, for example, an Orthodox church or the Roman Catholic Church. Another very important factor in the understanding of the relation between state and church is the hierarchical structure of the church. Communist states, maybe all states, all non-democratic states at least, can handle better churches with a strong hierarchical structure, because they have to deal only with a few people. So what happens sometimes in East Germany, that the state or state officials come to bishops and say, well, this pastor in whatever said that and that, stop him. And the bishop said, I cannot do that, because my being a bishop does not mean that I interfere into everything a pastor does. Not even that I interfere in everything what a member of the church does, because every member of the church has a right to be a theologian and is a theologian and has to follow his or her theological convictions. So that is one point which is very difficult to handle for state officials in East Germany, that Protestant churches, and I mentioned that I think two sessions before, are the less hierarchical churches compared with the Orthodox and the Roman Catholic Church. Another very important factor of the relationship between state and church is the political experience of a church. Especially for us Christians in East Germany, the experience of the confession church in the Nazi time in the Third Reich, in the so-called Third Reich, was very important for finding our own standpoint in the society. Because in the confession church, there was the attempt to combine your faith with a political action. Only very few people did that. We are very proud of them, like Dietrich Bonhoeffer. But this was a strong influence on the attitude of church leaders in East Germany, and one of our strongest and most famous bishop, who retired a few years ago, Albrecht Schoenherr, was a student of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and that was very influential of him. And this is the case, for example, for all minority churches too. For example, the Protestant in the Habsburg area, they could deal much better with political challenges than churches who have always been a majority church or even a state church. Some facts about the church in East Germany, to give you an idea what are these factors. East Germany is as large as Ohio. 41,000 square miles and has 16.7 million people. That is a bit more than Ohio. And an official brochure says that we have 10 million Christians, that is 60% of the population. That is, in my opinion, too much. I don't think that are more than 7 to 8 million. But anyway, of these 10 million Christians, 8 million or 80% are Protestant, belong to Protestant churches as the Lutheran Church or the United Church. 1.3 million are Roman Catholic, these are 13%, and 0.1 million belong to other churches, like Mormons. We have a very little Mormon population, or Baptist churches, and so on. And from the Reformation on, the church was organized locally. That means we don't have, we have area churches. We have the Church of Mecklenburg, and we have the Church of Thuringia, for example, or the Church of Saxony, which is very interesting situation. If you would belong to the United Church, if you live in Magdeburg, for example, and then you move to Rostock, which is in Mecklenburg and belongs to the Lutheran Church, then you become automatically a Lutheran, because there is no United Church in the areas where are Lutheran churches, and there's no Lutheran church in areas where the United churches. That is an agreement of the churches, and all these churches work together in the Federation of Evangelical Churches of East Germany, or the German Democratic Republic. The Constitution of East Germany, Article 39, guarantees religious freedom. Every citizen of the German Democratic Republic has the right to confess and to practice religious convictions. The churches and other religious fellowships handle their own affairs. And the second point is very important for the churches in East Germany, because that means that churches can, into the limits given by the state, organize their life by their own, which is different from other communist countries, as I mentioned before. But still, this religious freedom is a freedom which is regarded of a right of privacy, and, for example, not a right for proclaiming the gospel everywhere. That is not the right to do mission. For example, I'm a campus minister in Wismar. We have a little technical high school in Wismar. But there is no chance that I could have a board in the university which announces my worship services for the students or my program for the students. I don't even think about that, because it's just unimaginable to have that. That is meant from the state by the separation of church and state. Not only that the state does not interfere in religious business of the churches, but that the churches are not allowed to advertise religious things in public. The history of the church in East Germany can be divided in three parts. And you have to imagine that after the Second World War, it was a very difficult situation for the church in East Germany, because it was a very new situation for the church to get used to a communist state, to a totally different society, to a total new social and economic system. And most of church members opposed the change of society. I would call the first period the period of confrontation. And that was a period between 1945, between 1961. In this time, on the church side, there was pure anti-communism, and on the state side, pure oppression and struggle against church and religion. Christians were persecuted, people had to go to prison. There was a big conflict between the Communist Youth Organization, FDJ, and the Christian youth groups. The Communist Youth Organization tried to influence people to leave churches and to leave the youth group, and even accused people who worked in churches of being spies for the West or doing things against the law and so on. There was a lot of destruction of churches. You have to imagine that Germany was almost totally destroyed, so they didn't have to destroy a lot of churches. But there are examples of churches which survived the war, which were blew up after the war by the communists. The most famous example for that is the Leipzig University Church, which was a wonderful church, from the one of the oldest and most beautiful churches in the area of East Germany, which was just blown up because they erected a very ugly new university building there. So that was a period of confrontation. On the side of the church, there was not much acceptance. There was a lot of suffering, but there was a lot of stubbornness too. I remember a discussion of the Bishop Dibelius, who discussed with other theologians if you have to interpret the passage from the Romans letter, Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 13, you have to obey your government. If that could be applied for a communist government, and the discussion went so far that they discussed if you have to accept speed limits on autobahns because the speed limit was enforced by a communist government. I think that was a very stupid discussion. And I don't want to blame only the communists, but I blame as well church people who were not able to witness their Christian conviction in a very persuasive way. So there was stubbornness and struggle on both sides. The main issue in the late 50s, which led finally to the separation of both churches, the West German and the East German church, was a struggle that the West German church established a special ministry for soldiers. And from that point on, the West German church was only cited in East German newspapers as the NATO church. And there was a lot of pressure on church leaders in East Germany to separate from the West German church. Because from 1945 on, or at least from 1949 on, the church, the EKD, the Evangelical Church in Germany, was the only institution which existed in both Germanies, in East and West. And that was the case, surprisingly,
till 1969.
The second period, I would call the period of restrictions. 1961, maybe you know what happened in this year, on August 21st, the final closing of the borders, the Berlin Wall was erected. Before that, they already tried to stop traveling between the two Germanies, or the Russian and the Western zones. But in 1961, they stopped it totally. From one day to another, in August 61, the wall was erected, and that means at once, that meant at once, a total separation between the two Germanies. And it happened that even families who just lived in Berlin on both sides of the wall were separated for years. My aunt lived in West Berlin, and my father lived maybe 80 miles east of Berlin. They didn't see each other for over 10 years because it was such a strict separation. And that meant for the church that the church couldn't anymore communicate. You had a synod, but the synod couldn't work because half of the synod was in the east, the other half was in the west. And especially people, after some years, there were some openings in traveling for people from the west to the east, but members of the synod were not allowed to come into East Germany, especially bishops. And of course, people, members of the synod from the east, couldn't go to West Germany. So literally, the church couldn't work. For the church in East Germany, that meant now they had to learn, or now we had to learn, I was a little kid at this time, now we had to learn to find our standpoint in the society we lived in, and to find an identity in the place where at least God had put us. Before the wall, there was always a tendency in the church to not accept the system, but to hope that the system will be changing. And nobody took the East Germany very seriously. Nobody believed that East Germany as a state would long for a long time. Nobody expected that it could long for over 30 years. And from 61 on, we had to learn it. We had just to accept it. There was no other way. We had to learn a new identity. And that was a very difficult time for the church. Not only that we lost, over the years, 50% of our members because of the oppression of the state, and because Christians were the first who left East Germany because they didn't see any future in East Germany. Thousands of people left East Germany from 45 to 61. And now that was stopped. Now you had to decide. Now you had no other choice than to be a Christian in East Germany. The church reacted in very different ways, but mainly reacted conservatively. We have to keep what we have. We lost already so much. We have to keep what we have. And that led to a kind of inner immigration and to a ghettoation. Is that the right word in English? The ghetto, to be a church in a ghetto, and to keep yourself together with other Christians and to withdraw from society, to erect a wall around yourself, the wall of the inner immigration. So there were two walls in East Germany, the wall towards the west and the wall around your home. And that was not a very prophetic way, not a very prophetic thing to do. That wasn't a way which promised any success, because you cannot survive in a society by erecting walls around you. You have to interact with society. And finally, during a long period of of a very difficult situation for the church. The church tried to find a new identity in the society. And there is a very famous description of what the church should be in a communist society. Bishop Schoene, I don't know if he was the one who invented the words, but I always combine his person with these words. It was formulated on a synod. We don't want to be a church against socialism, which was the case in the 50s, more or less. We don't want to be a church in favor of socialism. That is the case of a little group inside the church. But we want to be a church inside socialism. Church in socialism. That was the new formula. And that meant accepting the reality, deal with the reality, and react on the reality, and to say what Christians have to say all over the world, to proclaim the gospel wherever you are. And this development did not only affect the church in a way that it became stronger in its witness towards the society, but it led to a kind of a greater acceptance by the state. Because the state realized that the church is not automatically the enemy of society. The state officials realized that Christians can do something for society. Maybe they are very strange. Maybe they don't always say what the state wants to hear. But that does not mean automatically that Christians are spy for the Western world. And so this development led to a kind of better relationships between state and church. I don't say relationship without problems, you know that. And of course the state tries very much to interpret the formula church in socialism as church in favor of socialism. And of course the state tries to influence the church to interpret the separation of state and church as a reluctance to do any political work. But the church never accepted that. Maybe some leaders of the church, maybe some peoples in the church are more hesitant to make political statements. But it was never the conviction of the church as a whole that being a Christian can mean not to react on the politics your state is doing. And that means for the situation now, we are still in this third period, finding and dealing with our new identity, that we have new possibilities, incredible possibilities. Sometimes we often are too busy or too concerned about our own existence that we do not use all possibilities we have as a church. And on the other hand, of course, there are still the restrictions, there are still the struggle, what can we do and what can we not do. And living as a Christian in East Germany means always wandering on the edge of being prophetic or just doing what you ever did. And that is sometimes very exciting. Sometimes it is very frustrating. Sometimes it's very painful. But it is a task, and it is something to do, and that is very good. I have a quotation by Schoenherr, 1979, and I have some newer stuff with me. Schoenherr said in 1979, "We wish that the relation between state and church shouldn't be too much influenced by the question of power, that the Christian citizens will be able to take responsibility in public tasks despite their religious convictions. We wish that in the future nothing proves the opinion that children get disadvantages because of their faith or the faith of their parents. We wish that more unembarrassed manner, free from prejudices, takes place in the dialogue and in the cooperation of non-Christians and Christian citizens, of state bodies and the church. That is not easy because the history of Christianity and socialism is incriminated by painful experiences on both sides." And as I said in the first session, the combination of Marxism and atheism has one reason in the situation of the church in the 19th century, that the church did not much care about the situation of the workers in the 19th century, and that the church missed to proclaim the gospel as a help and something which frees people, and that the church was on the side of the state and on the side of the oppressors. And only a few people, the so-called Christian socialists, tried to bring a stronger awareness into the church of the needs of the workers. And it's not a surprise for me that in Europe, I don't know how it is in West Germany, but it is still the case in East Germany, that you don't find many workers in churches. You find a lot of intellectuals, better educated people, but not workers, because the church missed the workers in the 19th century. And it's incredible which strong influence that has on the existence of the church till today. Separation between state and church. I have three statements about it, which are very different. One statement is the statement of the Secretary for Church Affairs in the Communist Party. His name is Gysi. And it is an interview given to the BBC. And I have some, I cut something out. It's only a few remarks by him, and I play this, and then I try to interpret it a bit.
We have the opinion discussions in the churches have to be discussions about religious affairs, and not a second state inside the state. That I will make quite clear, and that is not guaranteed in our constitution. And churches tells me that they agree. I'd like to make one thing quite clear. We have the separation between state and churches. That means we don't interfere in nothing what happens inside of the churches. And that's the thing we always have respected, completely respected. On the other side, of course, that means that the churches don't interfere in the politics of the state. And from time to time, of course, in our discussions, we make clear the border where begins the policy of state. What happens if the church's position, because of their Christian viewpoint, clashes with your obligations under the Warsaw Pact? The question didn't be posed, and it will not be posed. That's not realistic, because because we are living in the same state, we have, with all differences, same ideas about peace, you see? So we have no confrontation, no global confrontation, and we don't want to have no global confrontation. I know there are living outside of our country a lot of people who would like to have such a confrontation between churches and state, but I have to disappoint you. We will not have it. Not only because we are reasonable, but also because most of our church people are very reasonable.
Most of our church people are very reasonable. I don't know if you hear the slight thread in this. And of course he's a very sophisticated and clever politician. He has his position not by accident. This position is not acceptable for the church. And even if the state tries to bring the church into this position, it cannot be accepted, because that is exactly the schizophrenic attitude which is impossible for human beings. You cannot deal only with religious matters and then with political matters. But of course, the state tries to put a lot of pressure on pastors, on bishops, to act exactly as they want. They have nothing against worship service. They have nothing against some crazy people who go to church. But they have something against crazy people who think that this has an influence on their life. And there, of course, started the conflict. And as Gysi said, sometimes we have to make clear the border, and the state does that, sometimes very strongly. The church has to make clear the borders as well. The church has to say and to state very clearly that this schizophrenic position is unacceptable for the church. And some people, some bishops do that, some bishops, unfortunately, do it not that strongly as it is needed. A second statement about separation between state and church from the same broadcasting by the BBC.
I am a citizen of this country. This is my home place. And I want to live, and I can live here as a Christian. And I want to help the members of our congregations live as Christians in this society. I agree with the principle separation between government and church, and want to help to normalizing the relations between church and government. We have difficulties. The old distrust is sleeping, but can easily be woken up by actual difficulties. For instance, just in a matter in which communists and Christians as well are deeply engaged, that means the challenges for peace. We accept pacifistic initiatives because most of the young friends are honest, are not against the socialist society, but they want, with their refusing normal army service, they want to give a sign that disarmament is the only and main chance for surviving. Secondly, the church cannot say that the pacifistic way is the only way for Christians to live obedient. Young Christian men doing their normal army service are no worse Christians. That practically means that we say two things, and that is a problem. It is a problem for the government, who feel a little distrusting where do they stand? And the young friends in our congregation say, with quite a different background, very similar things.
That was Bishop Hempel, Bishop of Saxony, and at this time, at the time of the interview, he was the leading bishop of the Federation of Evangelical Churches in the German Democratic Republic. And he puts very well the conflict of the church, which is not only a conflict of leaders of the church, but a conflict for members of the church as well. Because for leaders of the church, it is very easy to make political statements even against the state, because they are in the safe position. But if you work in a factory, if you go to school, if you are dependent on the state, if you don't work for the church, it is a quite different situation. And this brings a conflict not only in the relation between church and state, but a conflict inside the church, which is, in my opinion, much more difficult and a much more difficult task of the church as a conflict between church and state. The third statement about the relation between state and church is by a Christian who belongs to the little group which thinks that Christians have to support the East German state and the system which is in power in the communist countries.
Also ich jetzt sage, entnehme ich Aussagen aus dem Kirche. The church has established that nowadays more young people are participating in services, for example, and in other activities than, let us say, in the past. But these were invariably young people who really had nothing in common with Christianity, had neither been baptized nor confirmed. And the church is quite apprehensive about what is pending for it, the position it is being maneuvered into and what may be the final outcome. Und ich kenne eine ganze Reihe Männer der Kirche, die gesagt haben, wir müssen uns mit diesen... And I know a great number of ecclesiastical spokesmen who have said, well, we must take a stand vis-à-vis such questions, otherwise we are going to find ourselves being misused. The state, and that was the crux of your question, leaves the clarification of this issue to the church, because we have a situation here where the state and church are separate.
I don't know if you could understand it, it's not the best tape. This was also a part of a BBC broadcasting about the church in East Germany. This statement says that Christian churches should do nothing for people who are not members of the church. And especially in the two topics in which the conflict is most obvious, the peace issue and the ecological question, which we will discuss on Saturday, there are more and more people who are interested but who do not belong to the churches. And there are even some members of churches who say, why don't we do that? Why don't we accept these people? We should concentrate on doing what we do as a church. We should do Bible studies. We can even do some political stuff, but we don't want to give a platform for people who do not belong to us. There are, for example, band writers, band musicians who cannot perform and who cannot read publicly in East Germany, who play and read in churches. The most famous example is Wolf Biermann. I don't know if he is known here. Before he was expelled, he gave a concert in a church, and he's not a Christian. He is a convicted Marxist and atheist. Should a church do that? I think it should not only, but it has to. because a church has to do mission. And how can we reach other people if we concentrate only on our own? How can we reach a society if we neglect the need of society? And one need of society is critical art, critical music, critical writers. And even if they don't belong to the church has to give their voice to them. Even if they don't say what the church can agree with, because the church has to give voice for the oppressed. And therefore, I personally cannot accept the standpoint that churches are only for Christians. Churches are to serve the whole society. I'm sorry, it's already 11 minutes to half past eight, and I wanted to give more opportunities to question, I promise that. So I stop here and open up for at least for 11 minutes for questions and reactions and comments. I see. That's my guilt. There are so many questions. I spoke the whole time. I'm sorry. Okay, 1, 2, 3. I have to repeat the question for the tape. The question was for underground churches and if there is a fear in the government. I don't think so. I think you can do so many things in the church that you don't have to go underground. And if you... I cannot tell too much about what's going on in the church because that would take a lot of time. But if you see what the church is doing, it's really amazing. And therefore, there is, as far as I know, no underground church and there's no need for it. The fear of the state is not so much that an underground church will establish, but the fear of the state is much more that the church becomes a platform for all people who oppose the state and the state policy. That is the fear of the state, and the state tries very hard to interfere with all means. Okay, the question is if the church has a unique opportunity because of the separation between state and church, and that is the case. The church is the only independent institution in a society where everything from your grocery store to sport event to schools to whatever exists in a society, railway, everything is organized and controlled by the state. There's only one institution in the society which is not controlled by the state, and that is the church. And that is a very unique and very challenging opportunity for the church, but of course a very difficult task for the church too, because that leads automatically into conflict with the state. And therefore the church can give voice for the oppressed, and therefore people who do not even belong to the church come to the church and ask for help. I have an interview. I try to translate some passages. An interview by the German news magazine Der Spiegel with the presiding bishop Gottfried Fork. And he said, the headline of that interview is, "We are an independent institution." And he says that therefore, because the church has this possibility, the church has to stand for the right of people, even if they don't belong to the church. And people come. If, for example, somebody wants to visit his parents or her parents or relatives in the West, and didn't get the permission. They come to the church and ask if the church can help, and sometimes the church can help. The question was how the church did learn to accept people who do not belong to the church, but who maybe have to say something which could be very important for the church. Did I understand that correctly? I wouldn't say that the church managed to do that already. It is a process of learning. And there's a lot of opposition in the church. One very sensitive and a lot problem which is a lot discussed in this country too, and I know that I speak about a controversial issue, is the problem of gay people. In East Germany, gay people have no possibility to express themselves and even to be present in the community. And whatever you think about gay people, you cannot reject them the right to be. And therefore the church became, during the last 5 years, a voice for these people too. And that was a lot of frustration inside the church. A lot of people thought the church should never do that, and it's incredible that the church did that for whatever reason, for theological reasons, for reasons of their own fear and whatever. But some people in the church thought it's important to give these people voice because they belong to the oppressed. And so I can only say it is a learning process, and I hope that the church will handle that and will be able in the future to give voice to people who may not belong to the church but who are important to be heard. I don't think so. The question was why it was so difficult to establish an own identity after the wall in 1961. You have to imagine that nobody in Germany in the 50s believed that East Germany would long for a long time. And nobody really accepted the system. And nobody took it seriously. So the church and other people didn't realize that they have to deal with the reality. And only after 61, when there was no other way than to realize we have to be citizens of this state, only then began a process of thinking, what can that mean for being a Christian and being in this situation?